Chapter 2. The thrust of the heavy assault boat's engines was a hammer to their bones, pressing the Astartes into the acceleration racks. Garrow held his muscles tense against the powerful G-forces and let his gaze wander over the interior of the clamshell doors that formed the bow of the boarding ship. Intricate scrollwork spread across the inner face of the doors, charting the countless actions the craft had been involved in. It was one of hundreds hurtling through the void at this moment, packed with men primed for war, each of them targeted on the Yorgul world ship with the unerring single-mindedness of a guided missile. Through the picked circuits laced into the lenses of his armour, Garrow rapidly blink-clicked through the data available to him via his command-level Voxnet. There were feeds from the eye cameras of the squad leaders, quick scripts of telemetry from Voyen's Medicae Auspecs, and there, for a moment, a grainy low-resolution image from outside across the boat's serrated prow. Garrow dallied on that for a few seconds, watching the motion of the vast cylinder as they approached it. The hull wall of pearlescent metal grew larger. It was so huge that the curvature of it was hardly noticeable, and the only sign that they were actually closing on it was the slow crawl of detail as surface features became clearer. Here a cluster of spikes that might be antennae, there a bulbous turret spitting yellow tracer fire. The captain felt no fear at the Yorgul guns. The assault was moving at punishing speed beneath a cloak of electronic countermeasures, heat baffle flare bursts and glittering clouds of metal chaff that would render sensors unintelligible. He was confident in Temeter's skills, certain that the captain of the Fourth had sent the picket fleet into disarray and robbed the Xenos of any usable warning. The wall was very close, the distance vanishing in moments. Garrow was aware of other boats converging at the edges of the greyed-out image. Long-range sensors had determined that this portion of the cylinder's hull was thin, and so it would be here, some half a kilometre from the cylinder's midline, that the Death Guard would make their ingress. Garrow let the link fade and gathered himself, switching over to the General Vox channel. His voice echoed in the helms of every Astartes on the boat.
"Steel in your bones, brothers! Impact is imminent. I want a clean and fast deployment. I want it so sharp, the Emperor himself would applaud its perfection."
He took a breath as the standby alert began to wail.
"Today, the Primarch leads us, and we will make him proud to do so. For Mortarion and Terra! Mortarion and Terra!"
Garrow heard Haker's rough baritone through the chorus of assent. Decius's voice cut across the channel, brimming with zeal.
"Count the seven!"
he cried, yelling out the company's call to rally.
"Count the seven!"
Garrow joined in, but his words were abruptly shaken out of him as the assault boat's thick bow rammed into the hull of the Yorgul cylinder. Piercing shrieks of rendered metal and escaping atmosphere thundered around the boat's thick fuselage as it drove itself deep, clawed tracks across its flanks, biting and sparking to pull it through meters of chitinous armor plate. Turning and shifting, the boat's autonomic pilot brain deployed hydraulic barbs to stop the outgassing of air from blowing them back into the void. The juddering, screeching, ear-splitting ride seemed to go on forever. Then, abruptly, it stopped. The assault ship listed. Garrow heard metal scrape on metal, and then the trigger rune before him on the clamshell hatch flashed on.
"Ready on release!"
he snapped. The hatch blew open on explosive bolts, and Garrow had his bolter loose and in his hands, ready to kill anything that dared to come in. But it was a sudden flood of brackish blue water that smashed down into the boat, not an enemy defender. The liquid was icy, swirling rapidly around his legs and up to his stomach.
"Go!"
Garrow roared. The battle captain was aware of his men moving behind him as he launched himself out of the assault craft. He plunged into the cobalt murk and burst back through the surface, turning around, getting his bearings. It was 100-to-1 chance. The assault had penetrated through the bottom of a shallow chemical lake, and the dark hulls of the boats protruded from the sluggish liquid like the tips of jagged armoured fingers. Already the waters were icing over and freezing into blue-white halos where the cold kiss of space had followed the invaders in. Through his helmet's breath screen, Garrow drew a rough inhalation that tasted of metallic salts. Nearby, he saw Grulgor kick angrily away from his lander and snarl out a command. There, on the shore, pointing with his man-reaper, was Mortarion. The sight of the Primarch was enough to send Garrow's blood racing, and he stormed forward through the shallows, his bolter held high.
"Count the seven!"
called the captain, and he did not need to look behind him to see the elements of his company follow in formation. Garrow advanced from the deployment point, with Haker's veteran squad at his side, joined by Decius and Sendek for support. Around them, the chaotic crash of gunfire and blades on blades rippled over the gentle landscape of the lakeshore. Hordes of Astartes met the Xenos in deadly, furious conflict. The alien force was quickly in disarray. Even in non-humans, Garrow could sense the motion and shift in the character of a battalion when they lost their nerve. Groups broke apart and reformed, milling and confused, instead of drawing out and away in any semblance of order. Butchering them would not take too much of the Death Guard's energy. It was clear the Yorghali had understood too late that the objects on a course towards their world ship were not massive munitions, but actually manned craft. The near-suicidal manner of such a boarding operation had shocked them, and they were unprepared for the brutal fury of the Death Guard incursion. Their mistake had been compounded by errors in the deployment of their competent enhanciles. The Yorghal cyborgs standing on the banks of the Chlorine Lagoon were massacred, their keening cries echoing over the shallow sandy dunes surrounding the landing zone. In the back of his mind, the battle captain was already thinking ahead, considering how they would secure the breach point before the companies split to attend their individual objectives. Garrow led his men in a thrust through a nest of spindly, whirling dervishes, fighting past sweeps of dull steel glaives and placing double-tap bolt shots through the ribs of every Yorghal they saw. The Astartes expanded outward from the lake in a ring of off-white armour, the advance rolling over the defenders. Moving and firing, Garrow's troop crested a dune of crystalline granules that crunched loudly beneath their boots and found some close combat kills. A phalanx of Yorghal swept and turned to them, caught in mid-flight, daring to stop and engage the Astartes. Weapons barked on both sides of the fight, the heavy roar of bolters drowning out the hissing clatter of electrostatic arc fire from the implanted projectors of the enemy. Decius, who favoured the blunt trauma of a power fist, slipped into the midst of the aliens and punched one to the powdery dirt over and over, slamming its long neck and oval head into a ruin. "Has he forgotten what I said already? I told him to aim for the torso for a quick kill," said Sendek. "He hasn't forgotten," said Haker. With a peculiar, ululating cry, two of the larger Xenos coiled and leapt directly at Garrow. In mid-jump, they came open, like spreading petals on a flower, their trifold legs and arms wide. He saw glitters where whole portions of limbs had been replaced with dull metal and black curves of carbon. In one swift motion, the captain let his bolter drop away on its sling and drew Libertas, a blue glow of power shimmering across the blade. In a wide, double-handed sweep, Garrow cut both the creatures in half, the sword whispering easily through their scaly tissue. Haker grunted his approval.
"Still sharp, then?"
"Aye," Garrow replied, shaking droplets of deep red from the blade. He paused momentarily to examine his work, viewing the severed limbs with the same dispassion he had the static intelligence images on Sendek's data slate. In their natural, fully-fleshed state, a Yorghali adult was perhaps 4.5 meters tall, moving on three legs with three joints that radiated from their lower torsos, like the spokes on a wheel. Apart from the extensile neck, the upper body of the aliens resembled the lower, but here the three limbs ended in hands with six digits. The egg-shaped head had deep-set, roomy eyes and fleshy notches for a nose and mouth. They had skin like Terran lizards, all scales and tiny horns of bone. However, there seemed to be no such thing as a natural Yorghal. Every single example of the Xenos species yet encountered and terminated by servants of the Imperium, from immature cubs to infirm elders, was modified with implanted devices or cybernetic proxy mechanisms. The slate showed oddities, such as spring piston legs, feet replaced with wheels and rollers, knife claws, sheets of subdermal armor plating, telecameras inside optic cavities, and even ballistic needler weapons nestled within the hollows of bones. The similarity in intent between the alien implants and the engineered organs that he possessed as an Astartes was not lost on Garrow. But these were Xenos, and they were invaders. They were nothing like him, and, as the Emperor had decreed, they were to be chastised for daring to venture into human space. Near to the sluggish waterline, a horde of clawed Yorghali, most likely some kind of hand-to-hand variant, hacked at a dreadnought from the Second Company. The venerable warrior had become bogged down in the chemical slurry at the lake's edge, and Garrow saw it spin on its torso axis, clubbing at them with a chain fist. A white flash fell from nowhere into the heart of the Yorghal rippers, and the captain heard Ignatius Grulgor bellow with wild laughter. Grulgor came to his feet, surrounded by the Xenos, and threw back his head. The commander of the Second had gone barefaced. The foul air of the bottle world did not concern him. In either hand, he carried a regulation Mars pattern bolter, and, with delight, Grulgor unloaded them at point-blank range into the enemy. The sheer velocity of the shots chopped the Yorghal into reeking gobbets of flesh, giving the dreadnought valuable seconds in which to extract itself. In moments, Grulgor stood at the centre of a circle of alien carcasses, vapour coiling from the barrels of his guns. The commander saluted the Primarch and flashed a sly, daring grin at Garrow before moving on in search of new targets.
"He's so artless, don't you think?" murmured Haker. "The esteemed Huron Fowl would have fought his own way out of that mess. But Grulgor wades in, more concerned about showing his mettle to the Primarch than where best to spend his ammunition. "We're Death Guard. We're not supposed to be artists," Garrow retorted. "We are craftsmen in war, nothing more, direct and brutal. We don't seek accolades and honours, only duty."
"Of course," said the veteran mildly.
Decius came bounding up to Garrow, kicking away the corpse parts from his kill.
"Ugh! Do you smell that, sir? These things, their blood stinks."
The battle captain didn't answer. He hesitated, his attention drifting, watching Mortarion in the thick of his cold fury. At the Primarch's side, Typhon and the twin sentinels of the Death Shroud were whirling and culling, their man-reapers moving unhindered through a milling, screaming pack of Yorghal. The Death Lord himself had clearly deemed these inferior strains of Xenos to be unworthy of his scythe, and instead was at work putting them to the light of his lantern. Hard-edged white rays keened from the stub barrel of the huge brass pistol, leaving purple after-images on Garrow's retina, despite the enhancements of his modified eyesight. Wherever the lantern's punishing beam struck, Yorghal defenders became charcoal sketches, twisting, then turning to smoke. Mortarion reached into a hooting scrum of aliens and ripped an injured man from their midst, batting them effortlessly away as he hauled the wounded Death Guard to safety. The Primarch spared the man some unheard words, and in return the bareheaded Astartes roared in assent, rejoining the fight.
"Magnificent!" breathed Decius,
and Garrow could sense the coiled need in the younger man. The yearning to run down the dune and press into Mortarion's company, to throw away all battlefield protocol just for the chance to fight within his master's aura. It was a difficult urge to resist. Garrow felt it just as strongly, but he would not lower himself to duplicate the self-aggrandizing behaviour of men like Grulgor. Then the younger Astartes tore his gaze away and cast around.
"So, this is the great creation of the Xenos, eh? Not much to look at,
Human spacefarers once lived in cylinders such as this, noted Sendek as he reloaded. In the deep past, before we mastered the force of gravity, they called them Onil colonies. Decius seemed unimpressed.
I feel like a fly trapped in a bottle. What sort of inside-out world is this?
He gestured upward, to where the landscape curved away to meet itself kilometres over their heads. A thin bar of illuminators extended away down the axis of the cylinder, disappearing to the fore and aft in yellow clouds. Garrow's eyes narrowed as he spied motes of dark green moving up there, shifting through the corridor of zero gravity at the world ship's centre. Haker tensed at his side.
I see them too, Battle Captain. Airborne reinforcements.
Garrow called out on the General Vox channel.
Look to the skies, Death Guard!
On the blood-slicked sandbanks, Mortarion stabbed at the air with the blade of his scythe.
The captain of the Seventh has keen vision. The Xenos seek to distract us with easy kills, to keep our attention on the ground.
The Primarch gave Garrow a curt nod and strode to the top of another shallow powder dune, ignoring the scatters of enemy needle shot that whined off his brass armour. Mortarion let his hood roll back so he could turn his face to the caged sky.
We must correct them.
For a long second, Nathaniel found himself rooted to the spot by his master's casual acknowledgement, despite his best intention to make little of it. The favour of his Primarch, of an Emperor's son, even for an instant, was a heady thing indeed, and he found some understanding as to why men like Grulgor would go so far to court it. Then Garrow shook it off and slammed a fresh sickle magazine into his weapon.
Seventh to arms! He cried,
bringing the bolter to his shoulder and sighting upward along its length. The Yorgal flyers came in numbers that dwarfed the ragged packs of land-based fighters the Death Guard met at the lake. Clad in a flickering green armour that wound about them in strips, the airborne Xenos had sacrificed two of their limbs to their mechanical surgeons. In their stead were beating wings of sharp metal feathers, each edged like a razor. Feet had become balls of curved talons, and there were more of the lethal arc-throwers and needle-guns embedded in joints where they had keen fields of fire. They came down whistling and hooting, met a wall of bolt-shell and high-energy plasma, and died. But this was only the first wave, and more of them, green glitters in the sky, poured out of the gauzy yellow cloud. Garrow saw one of Haker's men wreathed in humming glints of artificial lightning and smelled the stench of crisping human meat as a flight of the Xenos flyers shocked the life from him. Nearby, the dreadnought Huron Fowl deployed his missile packs and threw explosive death into the wheeling flocks, blasting dozens of them out of the air with the concussion. For his part, Garrow moved carefully, low to the oxide sands, picking off the Xenos in bursts of full auto-fire as they dropped in on swooping strikes. The attack pattern of the aliens was clear. They were attempting to push the Astartes back into the icy lake.
"Not today," said the battle captain to the air,
clipping the wings of a large adult female. The creature spiralled headfirst into the sands and twitched. He became aware that he had company. Garrow glanced over his shoulder and frowned in mild surprise at the cadre of lithe golden figures coming up behind him. The Sisters of Silence moved in quick lockstep, maintaining coherent fire corridors and combat discipline with an efficiency that he had only previously seen among his brother Astartes. It was difficult for him to tell the women apart. Their armour was polished to a glittering sheen, unadorned by any brash sigils or fluttering oath papers like the pale war gear of the Death Guard. Their faces were hidden behind hawkish gold helmets that reminded him of the barred gates to some ancient citadel, no doubt equipped with breather gear that let the unmodified sisterhood manage the toxic air of the bottle world. They seemed identical, as if they were forged from some mythic mould by the Emperor's hand. He wondered idly if normal men might view the Astartes in a similar way. The sisterhood carried swords and flamers. Blades and plumes of fire licked at the Yorgal flyers as they dipped into range. Some also carried bolters. As was their vow in the Emperor's service, the women never spoke, even those speared by needle rounds or struck by arc fire. They communicated in line of sight using a gestural language similar to Astarte's battle sign, all through a code of clicks over the vox. From the way they crossed the engagement zone, he had no doubt in his mind that they knew exactly where they were going. As they passed, the sister closest to him spared Garrow a look, and the battle captain felt a peculiar chill fall across him. That the sisterhood ranged the galaxy in search of rogue psychics to capture or expunge was widely known, but what was less understood was the manner in which they did it. Garrow had heard that, unlike other living beings, these unspeaking women were silent not just in the material world, but also in the ephemeral realm of the mind. There were names for them. Untouchables. Pariahs. Blanks. He frowned at the irrational nature of thoughts, pushing them away. In the next second, they were forgotten, as warning runes blinked inside his visor. Garrow caught the sound of shrieking air over razor wings. He moved as a flight of Yorgali came down upon them. Fast as only an Astartes could be, he slammed his hand into the back of the sister at his flank and sent her down and away as tenfold claws cut through the air towards them. Garrow threw his arm up to deflect the blow and felt the talons slice gouges through his vambrace. The screeching Yorgal ripped upwards and into his helmet, tearing it from his neck ring in a bone-wrenching impact. He staggered and recovered, bringing his bolter to bear. Garrow's gun barked, and from the sand the sister fired with him. None of the flight that had dared to attack them lived to take air again. The battle captain grimaced and patted his face, content to find he had gained no new scars from the encounter. Getting to her feet, the witch-seeker walked to him and presented Garrow with his helmet, ripped back from the Yorgal claws. It was badly damaged, but the symbolic gesture was an important one. The woman looked up and inclined her head. With her free hand, she touched her heart and her brow. The meaning was clear. My thanks to you. Unsure of the correct protocol, Garrow simply nodded in return, and that seemed enough. The women moved on, leaving him behind. It was only as he saw their backs that Garrow noticed the plume of dark hair issuing from the sister's golden helm, and the red aquila etching across her shoulder blades. He moved down to the core of the fighting, over a dunescape littered with Yorgal dead, and, on rare occasions, fallen figures in pale grey power armour. Each brother perished here ground Garrow's rage like stone on stone, for every one of them was worth 1,000 of the freakish intruders. The captain heard the slamming crack of Mortarion's lantern once again, and looked up to see the Primarch sweep it through the air like a searchlight, catching aliens afire, turning them into a rain of ashen fallout. Typhon's harsh growl sounded on the General Vox channel.
Well, if this is all we have to face, I question if our might will even be tested today.
My father sent me here.
Mortarion's words were mild but heavy with intent.
Do you think him wrong to do so, First Captain?
Another man might have balked at the failed threat, but not Typhon.
I only chafe at such poor sport, Lord Commander. We dally here too long, sir.
Garrow caught a grunt of agreement.
Perhaps we do, my friend.
When he spoke again, the Primarch did it aloud, eschewing the vox to broadcast his voice.
Sons of Death, you know your objectives. Take your units and prosecute the foe. Typhon, with me. Grulgor, the drives. Garrow, the hatchery. Go now.
The elements of the 7th Company came to him, and the battle captain was pleased to see that there had been few losses among them. The apothecary, Voyen, looked him up and down, silently commenting on the state of his helmet where the headgear hung from his belt. Decius, too, was unhooded, and his pale face was split with a murderous grin. The staining of viscera on his power fist was mute testament to his kills so far. He nodded to them, and the men of the Seventh took up their formation. They moved, letting Grulgor's company mop up the last of the airborne Yorgul. They crossed out from the crystalline dunes at a quick pace, and into groves of tall tree-like forms, woven from some kind of rough fibre. Sendek ministered to his Auspex.
Tactical plot shows heat sources comparable to Yorgul hatchery constructs in this direction, he pointed. That way. The virtual compass is having difficulty assimilating the internal structure of the bottle world.
How current is that data?
Asked Haker.
The sense servitors neglected to tell us we were landing in a Kemlik. I find myself wondering what else they may have missed.
Sendek frowned.
The readings are contradictory.
Best we be ready for surprises, then,
noted Raoul, hefting the combi-bolter in his grip.
Do not allow yourself to be lulled into complacency by the name of your target, Captain.
Mortarion had spoken the words without looking at him, as Garrow stared into the hololith in Endurance's assembly hall.
This so-called hatchery is not only the creche for the Yorgali young, but also a place of modification. You will probably find eggs filled with armed adults, as well as their larvae.
Garrow recalled the Primarch's words as he looked up at the towering fibrous trees. Further into the forest, where the stalks were planted in dense regular rows, the tree things were heavy with great grey orbs that hung like monstrous fruits. Some showed signs of motion inside, things shifting about in lazy thrashes. Here and there were pools of watery fluid that Sendek immediately designated as yolk. Voyen agreed with the description, pointing out dripping orbs up above that hung ragged, formless and clearly empty.
The roots of the trees drink the liquid back into the system, noted Sendek. Quite efficient.
I'm rapt with fascination,
Raoul said, in a tone that indicated the reverse. Decius kept his bolter close.
Where are the defences? Do these Xenos care so little about their spawn that they leave them open to any predator that happens by?
Perhaps their children are the predators,
offered Haker darkly. One of the men from the veteran squad halted and gestured ahead.
Captain, he asked, do you see this?
What is it?
Asked Garrow. The Astartes bent and gathered up a shiny metallic object, roughly oval in shape. He turned it over in his hands.
It's a helm, I think.
He held it up to show them, and Garrow's blood chilled at the sight of a Silent Sister's war gear. Something shifted inside it, and a severed head dropped from the helmet to the ground, trailing a plume of blonde hair.
Clean cut,
noted the Astartes.
Very fresh.
Voyen's eyes narrowed.
Where's the rest of her?
Decius used his bolter to point towards different branches of the trees.
Here, there, and there. Oh, over there as well, I think.
Wet rags of red and gold were visible on each.
The sisters came to the hatchery.
Haker cast around, looking low.
Why would witch-seekers come here?
Decius gave a dry chuckle.
That old man would seem to be secondary to the question of what it was that killed her.
From ahead of them, where the trunks were thickest, there came a ripple of bolter fire. Garrow spied the glitter of sporadic muzzle flashes, even as a low rumble spread through the sandy dirt beneath his boots. Cracking sounds, sharp as snapping bone, reached him as trees in the middle distance shook and bent, the tops of them fluttering and falling as something large knocked them down.
You're about to get your answer,
Raoul said, raising his bolter. The Sisterhood came through the egg trees, moving like dancers, harrying the Yorgali Enhancile with their weapons. It was the largest of the Xenos that Garrow had encountered on board the Bottle World, and of a design that had not been in Sendek's documentation. Outwardly, it resembled the form of a Yorgul in a basic sense, but it was perhaps 10 times their mass. As high as the canopy of the trees, the thing appeared to be an agglomeration of scaled flesh and metals, a Yorgul deformed by gigantism and then improved by technology to be larger still. The battle captain could make out fleshy matter inside a glass orb at the middle of the cyborg's mass. Perhaps, he reasoned, whatever remained of the Yorgul's original form. It had no arms. Instead, there were writhing clusters of grey iron tentacles sprouting from each of its upper limb sockets. Some moved like striking serpents, snapping out at the sisters, while others knotted around an unseen burden that the thing clasped desperately to its chest.
"Some sort of guardian?" offered Voyen.
"Some sort of target?"
retorted Decius, and opened fire. The Death Guard moved in to assist the Sisterhood, firing on the approach, adding their shots to the storm of bullets that haloed the cyborg. Garrow had the fleeting impression that the machine form was trying to escape, but then it turned around and threw any notion of fleeing aside. Perhaps it might have got away from the women, but with Garrow's arrival, it had no other choice but to stand and fight. Metal feelers lashed out across the ground, keen-edged tips slicing furrows in the dirt. They flexed and moved, ripping up divots and roots. Haker was caught off guard as a tentacle lashed at him and threw the Astartes aside, rolling off the trunk of an egg tree. Garrow saw another rip the leg from one of the troopers and put him down in a welter of blood. The captain ducked away from the questing appendages as they hissed over his head. A witch-seeker, caught with her bolter breech open and magazine empty, met the tip of them through her breastbone. They stabbed through her torso and pinned her to a tree, then tore back out in a jet of spent vitae. Still trailing blood, the tentacles bent and whipped at the Emperor's warriors, clipping Rahl on the backswing and tearing the gold hood from another of Kendall's women. Without her helmet, a severe null maiden with a red topknot and portcullis faceplate choked and stumbled, the rancid atmosphere of the Yorgul vessel scouring her lungs. Voyen was already moving to assist her, and Garrow's face soured. The cyborg was just too fast, too wild and uncontrolled in its motions. To kill it, they would need to take a more direct approach. He thumbed the selector switch on his bolter to fully automatic fire and charged the Xenos hybrid. The battle captain unloaded an entire clip into the legs and thorax of the cyborg, gouts of oily fluid and flashing short-circuit arcs marking where each round hit home. The Yorgul thing hooted and growled, turning to focus its attention on the figure in grey-white armour. Steel-sheathed whips shot out, extending and buzzing with effort, and Garrow threw himself into a roll, dodging the places where they stabbed into the soil. The tips of the lashing feelers clattered over his ceramite armour, and Garrow felt a sting of pain as they raked the place where the flyer's claws had cut him on the lakeside, reopening the wounds there. A chance flexion of the tentacle, a second of delay on his part, and suddenly the captain's bolter was spinning away from him through the air, the strap hanging ragged as the gun was snapped from his grip. Garrow turned into the force of the impact, rolled again and came up with Libertas in his hand. Stabbing lines of metal came at him, and he batted them away with the sword blade. Flares of sparks glaring orange-white in the sullen artificial daylight of the egg tree groves. The others were pouring their fire onto the cyborg, but its attention was still split between Garrow and the object it held tight, something swaddled in thin grey muslin. The battle captain threw himself at the Yorgul mechanoid, chopping off the tips of tentacles and slashing at others. He spun as he felt iron limbs touch his legs and hacked at them, but he was close to its torso, and the cyborg's appendages were thicker here, more muscular, more resilient. Powerful coils enveloped him, and Garrow felt the ground drop away. The machine hybrid shook him violently, his sword arm flailing against his side where he could not turn Libertas in his defence. His teeth rattled inside his skull, and there was blood in his mouth. He heard the splintering of flex steel in the joints of his armour, smelled the acidic tang of spilled coolant as leaks jetted from his backpack. The Astartes hissed through his teeth as pain bit into him, compacting his implanted carapace and ribcage. It was a struggle to keep breath in his lungs, as the pressure grew greater with every moment. Garrow was aware of motion as the cyborg drew him closer, up to the glassy capsule of its meat core. Hollow, predatory eyes stared at him, brimming with alien hate. The Yorgle wanted to watch him die, to savour it. The killing stress continued to increase as Garrow's three lungs ran dry, his heart hammering wildly in his chest. Darkness was closing in on him. At the edges of the captain's consciousness, he glimpsed a shimmering ghost image, a figure that seemed to be his Primarch, beckoning him towards oblivion. In that moment, Garrow tapped a final reserve of mad, desperate strength.
"By Terra's will," he told himself, "in the name of my homeworld and of the Imperium of Man, I will not perish."
New energy flooded through him, hot and raw. Garrow reached deep into himself and found a wellspring of conviction, steeling himself against the Xenos's murderous embrace. The captain felt warmth spread into his agonized muscles as he pictured Terra's majesty in his mind's eye. And there, with his hand cupped beneath it, holding it safe, the Emperor.
"In the Emperor's name, I will not fail. I dare not fail."
He unleashed a wordless, furious snarl of defiance and fought back against the alien coils, putting every last ounce of power he could muster into Libertas. The power sword's blade met Yorgle's steel and parted it, screeching through artificial nerves and mechanical cabling. The cyborg faltered and stumbled as Garrow cut his way free, fragments of cracked ceramite shedding from his armour. The captain's burning lungs drank in ragged gulps of air. He pressed forward, even as the machine form tried to shove him away, bringing up the glowing tip of the blade. Garrow saw emotion flutter over the trembling mouthparts of the Yorgle as Libertas touched the crown of its glass pod. Unlike the Xenos, the captain did not linger for the sake of cruelty. Instead, he pressed his entire weight behind the sword and shattered the capsule, forcing the weapon into the fleshy torso of the alien until it burst from the cyborg's back in a rain of crimson. The Yorgle collapsed with a thunderous crash, tearing down a stand of trees as it fell. Half-finished things erupted from eggs, mewling and spitting, to be met by the guns of the Death Guard and the Witchseekers. Taking back his sword, Garrow dropped to the ground as the cyborg's last nerve impulses fluttered through its limbs. Its burden, the shape in grey muslin, was released and rolled to his feet. The captain knelt and unwrapped it with the tip of his blade. Inside, there was an immature Yorgle. What surprised him was not that the Xenos hatchling was completely free of any mechanical augmentation, but the freakish mutation of the tripedal being. It was conjoined, a malformation of two aliens that had somehow become merged during growth. Its skull was enormous, a bloated thing with four distinct chambers, quite unlike the ovoid heads typical of its species. Legs and arms twitched towards him, milky eyes swiveled and narrowed in Garrow's direction. Without warning, the air around him changed. The atmosphere became greasy and slick on his skin, suddenly scratchy with the sharp stench of ozone. He had felt such things before, on other battlefields, in other wars for the good of humanity. Garrow's mind screamed a single word, and he understood exactly why the Sisters of Silence had come to this place.
Psyker.
He drew up the sword in an arc, ready to take the creature's head from its shoulders.
Wait.
The word struck him like a cold flood, making his arm go rigid. The ozone stink enveloped him, clouding his thoughts and tightening on his mind just as the cyborg had coiled around his body. It reached into Garrow, searching through him as easily as he might have leafed through a book.
"Death Guard,"
it whispered, amusement in its words.
"So confident of your rightness, so afraid to see the crack in your spirit.
Garrow tried to complete the killing blow, but he was locked tight, trapped in amber.
Soon the end comes. We see tomorrow. So shall you. All you worship will wither. All will...
The mutant's torso burst in a welter of blood and bone fragments, as a single bolt around tore a hole through it as big as a fist. Suddenly, the haze was gone, and Garrow blinked it away, as if waking from a deep sleep. He turned and found Sister Amandira Kendall at his shoulder, smoke curling from the muzzle of her gun. Her dark eyes studied him from the vision slits of her helmet. The captain stood carefully and duplicated her gesture from the lakeside, touching his armoured fingertips to his heart and his brow. He became aware of a sound reaching through the wooded ranks of the hatchery, a whistling, a keening that was quickly growing in volume. The sound was atonal and harsh on his ears. It was a lament, a cry from the unhatched.
"Look!"
shouted Haker.
"In the trees! Movement! Everywhere!"
Every egg orb that Garrow could see was trembling as the Yorghali things inside thrashed and tore at their confinement, frantic in their need to escape. He flicked a look to Kendall as the sister directed her cohorts to gather the dead mutant into a chainmail sack. She glanced up at him and nodded. Perhaps Voyan had been correct. Perhaps the cyborg had been some kind of guardian protecting the Psyker child. And now it was dead, its siblings were enraged. Spatters of yolk rained down from the trunks. Kendall flicked out harsh gestures to her sisters, and the women moved off, turning their flamers on the foliage. Garrow saw the merit in her action and called into his vox-link,
"Deploy grenades and explosives! Follow the Sisterhood's example! Destroy the trees!"
The fibrous matter of the egg trees was dry and made excellent tinder. In moments, the alien woodland was burning, the grey sacks popping and boiling. Many of the enhanciles made it to the ground, mad with fury, and they were put down with detached precision. Garrow watched the blue-tinged flames sear and dance as they spread, murdering the world ships dormant and newborn. All across the bottle, the Yorghal were perishing beneath the hand of the Death Guard, making a lie of the mutant child's final words.
"A lie," said Garrow aloud,
watching the poisonous smoke turn above his head.